Griff, the most recent scrimmage, I know no eyeballs allowed from the media, but what are you hearing?
Wow. Well, it's one that everybody's kind of trying to decipher. You know, they gave Dwan Mathis, the redshirt freshman, the majority of snaps. And there were a lot of boosters there. This was one that was designated for booster attendance. Georgia has something called the McGill Society. And these guys have raised about $150 million in the last 5 years for a facility. So every now and then, Kirby's got to let them in a practice or a scrimmage.
Right.
And they were there with their notepads and their iPhones and their MacBooks, and everybody had notes. And so, you know, they're not professional reporters. So there's all sorts of interpretation, but the bottom line is this. You know, Georgia has a quarterback in JT Daniels that is still recovering from knee surgery, has not yet been cleared for the opening game. Kirby said last week he anticipated he would be cleared, but we don't know where that's at. And so, you know, if you're Georgia, you got to have other guys ready. And so Dwan Mathis got a lot of reps in that scrimmage. JT Daniels also got reps. And then Carson Beck got all the reps with the second team, so... You know, they're really working to make sure that they can, you know, be as ready as possible because, I mean, JT Daniels, you know, got injured in the first half of the first game last year. Dwan Mathis hasn't played since the 2018 high school season in Detroit.
Yep.
And Carson Beck, I guess, he played last season in Florida. So, but he's never played down at college football. So, you know, they're trying to get guys ready for that trip to Arkansas.
If you had to guess, would Mathis be the first guy out, first game?
I think if JT's healthy, he starts.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
you know, you got to look at it like this. You know, it's not a vacuum. If this was a situation where you said, "Boy, we don't know how many we're going to need today," but the fact is, Georgia's got the best defense in the country. Arkansas is not much of a threat. The only life they're going to get is whatever you give them. You want to start a quarterback that's been in a game before at the college level. Even though the environment, you know, isn't going to be necessarily roaring and deafening, you still want to start a guy that's, you know, that's been out there and knows how to manage a team, you know, in front of a stadium of people, and also gives you an opportunity to use more of your playbook.
Has there been anything that you've seen to date in college football, meaning the games we've seen so far, that has led you to think there's a trend of some sort going on?
Well, I don't know if trend is the right word, but, you know, I do think that it's evidence that, you know, adversity, it's really challenged coaches to change how they do things.
Yeah.
And the teams that have been able to adjust the best, you know, the teams maybe that have the most conviction and the most buy-in, I think that may mean more than ever now. You know, you take a look at what the Sun Belt did out there in the Big 12. I think home field advantage is obviously, we wonder when we look at Big 12 teams losing at home and Florida State losing at home to Georgia Tech, you wonder if a big crowd would have made a difference in those games. Maybe it's an advantage for the visitor. I just think maybe instead of it being neutral for the home team, I almost wonder if it saps the home team. You know, you go out there with an anticipation of what you're going to get in your home stadium, and it's empty, right? It's like everybody knows how Vanderbilt feels now. You know, it's hard when you don't have a lot of people behind you cheering sometimes. And I just kind of wonder if we're going to see more road teams winning than typical. I know the home field advantage has always meant a lot for various reasons. Clearly, early trend is that it doesn't mean as much, and we would have anticipated that.
You just made me think of something. Are you planning on being on the road at all the Georgia games? And
no.
What are the okay? I was about to.
No, I've talked to my boss about it. I'm going to be one of those that's going to cover the game remote. I just because of the. You know, I've been to all these stadiums and all these trips, and you know, man, these towns are great, but. You know, the reality of it is the way they're going to do things, Bill, there's not going to be any post-game access. I can't get on the field before the game to walk around and watch the guys warm up. I can't go out there and shake hands with people and talk to people and do that. You know, I've got to go straight to a press box and put a mask on and sit there, and I'm not allowed to move. You know, the press conference after the game is going to be on Zoom. It's not going to be going down there and asking players questions and asking coaches questions, so... I've got the same access at home on the Zoom call after the game that I do at the stadium, and I've also got the benefit of, you know, a lot of better camera angles and probably faster injury updates than I would get in the press box. So the reason a beat guy goes to the game is to network, to talk to other beat guys, to talk to coaches on the field, to watch position groups pick up on things, to interview players after the game, to have that moment where you pull the guy aside. All that stuff's gone. So, you know, I just told my boss, I said, hey, man, you know, the reality of this is, from a production standpoint, I can do a lot more from home, and you know, I feel like that's best for my team that I'm on, and I can't be selfish about that. So that's the decision that I've made. I work for a company that, you know, basically says, hey, you know, you need to do what's best for your job, and we trust you with it.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't even know. Is it a league-wide rule like the SEC about visiting, or is it school by school?
Yeah. No, it's going to be standardized. Those press box policies, you know, and I don't know how much people really care about press box policies, but just know, I mean, you know, people walk in the stadium, you got to have your mask on, you got to go straight to your seat. You know, there's no everything is it's going to be sterile. You know, they're going to be closing that press box down. I'm usually the last guy out. I usually like to stay about 5 or 6 hours after the game and leave 1 or 2 in the morning. But, you know, because I try to write a lot of my Sunday stuff. But now, I mean, they're going to kick you out of the press box, you know, 2 or 3 hours after the game. I'd have to pick up my computer and go home and write for another 4 hours. So, you know, there's just a lot. Listen, I'm not complaining. I don't want to sound like a whiner because this sounds like whining. It's just not. You're asking me what the conditions are. There's people who've got some real problems out there over whether or not they get a hot damn sandwich or not. So this is kind of a silly conversation. But anyway, I know you asked, and I'm just letting people know. That's the situation, Bill, to answer your question.
Tell us what you think's happening right now in the Big Ten.
It's a mess. It's a political override. You know, we've talked about it all summer. I think about, you know, the conversations you and I have had every Tuesday, and, you know, I get feedback from a lot of people on my Twitter account at MikeGriffith32, and I always appreciate hearing back from people because sometimes I wonder, am I speaking into a vacuum? Does anybody hear the message? Does anybody think like I think about politics ruining college football? Or am I just the only one that thinks that? Because I don't know. You know, I'm not out socializing, right? And I don't spend any time in the chat board, so I just kind of have my theories based on what I read and observe and my experiences in life. And you know, the Big Ten is a prime example of what's wrong with college football. You know, you've got academians that are so far removed that they fail to realize these college presidents want to reap the benefits of their sports programs. Places like University of Michigan, great example, or Minnesota. You know, they want to reap the benefits of the front porch of their university, and yet they don't want to cater to the needs and, you know, the opportunities that they essentially promised these players.
Right.
Yeah, come to Michigan, sign with us. Oh, yeah, but we're going to pull the rug out from under your feet and vote against you playing football. Man, that's bull crap, right? That'd be like somebody, you know, that'd be like you going to a school to major in something and they shut down your major your freshman year. You'd be like, well, what the heck am I doing here then? I came here to be a veterinarian and you just shut down your vet school? You know, and they're just so far removed that they would put their political persuasions ahead of the needs of their football programs, and it's embarrassing, and it's blatant. The data is out there, the games are being played, and we're seeing academians and presidents, you know, that want to steadfast, you know, that are putting their egos ahead of the best interests of their institutions. So it'll be interesting to see if some of these schools like Michigan and Minnesota and Rutgers, you know, take a long look in the mirror and reevaluate the importance of the sport program. So, and if they don't, you know, this is going to do damage that's going to be hard for people to forget.
What did you think about Clemson in their game? Obviously, it wasn't close, but did they look like the best team?
They looked like the best team on the field that day. You mean over Wake Forest? You mean
yeah.
Something? I'm just kidding. I don't know what the best team looks like. And number two, they don't have to look like the best team. They didn't look like the best team 2 years ago until they beat Alabama and out in California. They certainly didn't look like the best team before they made a quarterback change. They didn't look like the best team when they were struggling with Texas A&M. So it's about survival. If you're Clemson, all you got to do is survive. You don't got to look like the best team. I got questions about Clemson this year, though. I do. I kind of wonder how much they're going to miss some of the receivers. And, you know, Trevor's a marked man. Everybody's watched film of him the entire offseason. Everybody's going to have a plan for him. You know, I guess I would probably, you know, think it's 50-50 they lose a game during the regular season. Because it's just that kind of year. I mean, it's 2020, man. And, there's a lot of unprecedented conditions and circumstances that we're going through as humans. And so there's a lot of unprecedented circumstances and behavior that we're seeing around the nation.
Mike Griffith with us from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Dog Nation. You covered Georgia, but that was a nice win. I'm not sure what to expect out of Florida State after that, but that was a nice win for Tech.
It was. And they're making inroads. Georgia Tech, I think they got a good coach. And, I know some people, part of that program. And listen, they do everything first class there. They took good care of the kids. I mean, there's no reason why Georgia Tech shouldn't be a good football program when you look at where they're located and what their school has to offer. You just wonder, then the other part is obviously, we talked about earlier, what's the commitment of your institution, right? There's no reason Vanderbilt shouldn't be a good football program, right? Same thing. I mean, look at all the talent in Middle Tennessee and their proximity to, other places in the South. And, a lot of kids would love to go to school in Nashville. So a lot of times it's just a decision on whether or not, school wants to put resources into it and take care of their student athletes. And if you don't take care of your student athletes, it's to me, that's sad, especially if you're an SEC school. It's really sad because it's the best conference in the country. But, I think Georgia Tech's probably a little overdue, kind of getting it back. For a while there with Paul Johnson, they did things different, and that enabled them to be competitive when they hit the right sort of players. But, what's happened is a lot of players are saying, I'm going to play in the NFL, so I don't want to play in that offense. And it's damaged their recruiting. Now, at some places where you can't recruit effectively, most notably the service academies, you're going to play those option schemes that are difficult to prepare for because there's going to be an imbalance of talent. Honestly, I think that'd be a secret for Arkansas to get competitive again. I think Arkansas is just in a horrendous position in terms of recruiting. I mean, if you look at Vanderbilt and Arkansas, Vanderbilt should be far, far more successful in football with their ability to recruit and their institution and their location. You look at Arkansas, you say, oh, man, that's too bad. Because, Arkansas really got crushed when Missouri and Texas A&M came in the league because Arkansas was getting some of those kids, from those western states that wanted to be a part of the SEC. And now, right. What's Arkansas really have for itself? Louisiana locks it down south of them. Mississippi's got two schools, and Alabama, recruits pretty heavily in there. And, Missouri's over there now. And how many, So you look at Arkansas, I kind of feel bad for that school. I feel sorry for those guys because, what are they going to do to be competitive? Maybe they ought to go to the triple option because I just don't see them being able to bring in the kind of talent it's going to take to win, to compete for championships.
Griff, last one here. Josh up in London, Ohio. Ask Griff where he would put Ohio State in the polls if they start October 17th playing.
I'm going to put him anywhere until I see him play a game. I don't know anything about that program. I know about their background, but I don't know how their kids have handled the pandemic. I mean, I don't know where that program's at. I know Justin Fields was down here at a Georgia scrimmage. He wasn't back in Ohio practicing with his own guys, So I don't know where the level of buy-in is. I mean, I'm just not sure what to expect. I know Ohio State lost a lot. They lost some great players, man. I mean, Dobbins and Chase Young. I mean, these are generational talents in Ohio State. Such an embarrassment of riches, though. I mean, it's such a great program. I mean, listen, head and shoulders above the Big Ten. I'm still trying to figure out how I watched Michigan State beat them twice there with D'Antonio. I don't know how Michigan State beat them, but they're so much better, in Michigan. Michigan why can't Michigan compete with them? I don't know. But their campus, the stadium, the fan base, I mean, Ohio State is what Georgia could be if they got it together. I don't know if I've said this on the show, but, you look at Michigan and I compare them to Alabama, right? Because Michigan's got to share the state of Michigan with Michigan State, just like Alabama's got to share the state of Alabama with Auburn. But Ohio State is an incredibly rich state in talent, much like Georgia, and they don't really have another program to compete with in their own state, somewhat like Georgia. I don't think Georgia Tech is really much of a threat. So when you come from a talent-rich state and you're kind of the only one, you're kind of the big dog, that gives you the potential to be a dynamo. Now, Ohio State has cashed in and built good facilities and taken care of business. Georgia's just now catching up. So I think a lot of Ohio State, but in terms of rating teams, I'm very much a believer in one season to the next. I try not to be persuaded or biased based on the previous season. I mean, to some extent, that there's some data there. There's some data points you want to reach for, but you know, because they haven't played a game and other people have played, I'd be that stinker that wouldn't rank them until they played a game. And then if they played a game and beat somebody by 40 or 50, you know, I'd go, okay, wow, you know, let's put these guys, you know, maybe, you know, if we're just talking about program cachet, I would probably put them ahead of Oklahoma this year if they're blowing people out like they're supposed to. But I'm not ready to. I don't have them in the national championship conversation simply because their academia screwed it up so bad that they're behind schedule. And even if they started in October, I don't know if they could catch up in time if the college playoff games were still in January.
Griff, we'll see you next week, sir.
Thanks, Bill.